Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Wouldn't it be nice if the United States of America could be a superpower in maintaining peace and to be a champion of human rights? If we helped one person have a new friend, that's what I think would make America a better country.
That's the voice of former President Jimmy Carter, who passed away over the weekend at the age of 100. It is the Chris and Amy show, and we go to the Quiver River Electric guest line again this morning. The chief White House domestic policy advisor to President Carter, Carter's biographer, currently senior counsel in Covington and Burling LLP's international practice, to talk with us about Carter's presidency, Stuart Eisenstadt is with us on KMOX. Stuart, we appreciate your time today. How are you?
I'm fine. And just on a personal note, growing up in Atlanta, I used to listen to KMOX at night to get the St. Louis Hawks basketball games when Bob Pettit and Clyde Lavelle were playing. So it's nice to be back on KMOX.
That's incredible. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And I thank you for your time this morning, because I know you've been busy sharing your memories with former President Jimmy Carter. And I'll start with that. What is his greatest legacy in your mind?
I think his greatest legacy is that he strived and achieved peace in so many areas, both in the White House and afterward. He took all the things he had been trying to do in the White House, human rights, which he applied to Latin America, and got thousands of political prisoners out of jail, and laid the groundwork for Latin America going from dictatorships to democracies. He did the same with championing Soviet jury immigration in the Soviet Union. Camp David was the greatest diplomatic achievement of any president in history, bringing peace between Egypt and Israel, which had fought four wars together. And if I may take a very quick anecdote, he drafted over 13 days and nights. He personally, not his aides, he personally drafted 22 peace agreements and shuttled them between Prime Minister Begin and President Sadat. The 13th and last day comes. Begin comes to Carter's cabin and says, "Mr. President, I know we've tried hard. I cannot and will not make any more compromises. Please get me a limousine to take me to Andrews Air Force Base. I've got an Al plane waiting to go back to Israel." And the president realizes that this would undercut Sadat's whole historic trip to Israel and would leave egg on his own face. Because of his attention to detail, he knew that Begin had a soft spot for his eight grandchildren, so he gets his personal secretary, Susan Clow, to make eight copies of the original photograph of the three leaders on the first day when they came to Camp David, and then inscribes each one individually to the named grandchild, walks it over to Begin's cabin, and he inscribed it, "Jimmy Carter with hopes for peace." He hands it to Begin. Begin reads aloud in front of Carter the name of each grandchild, and he sees his eyes tear, his lips quiver, and he says, "Mr. President, for my grandchildren, I'll make one last try." And that's what got us over the top. That is an incredible legacy.
Wow.
It's lasted to this day. We have this fighting in Gaza. Israel and Egypt still have close diplomatic relations and share intelligence against terrorists.
What do you think we get wrong about his presidency?
I think that there are two reasons we get it wrong. The first is, ironically, that his post-presidency lasted so long and was so successful, monitoring 100 elections, solving and curing two African diseases, River Blindness and Guinea Worm, building 4,000 homes with Roseland for Habitat for Humanity. The second is, we don't forgive someone who loses a re-election. And he lost that re-election for three reasons, which overwhelmed so much of what he has done, so much of what, to my mind, makes him the most impactful one-term president, and I call it the three I's. Inter-party Democratic warfare, when Ted Kennedy ran against him and didn't reconcile after the convention, splitting the party. Second was inflation, which he inherited from Ford and Carter. Ford and Nixon, it got worse. But in part, it got worse because of the Iranian Revolution, which shut down 5 million barrels of oil per day. Oil prices, through no fault of his own, went up twice, two times. We had gas lines and so forth. And third is the Iranian hostage crisis, which was so debilitating for 444 days. He made a fatal decision not to use military force initially. He did do the rescue mission, but not to bomb Iran because he wanted to save the lives of the hostages. And he did. After the election, every single hostage came out without one hair on their head harmed. Now, on the inflation, this is another courageous act that says so much about him. Inflation is roaring for the reasons I've mentioned. It's July 1980 election is coming around the corner. He decides, over the objection of all of his advisors, to appoint Paul Volcker to head the Federal Reserve. Volcker told him clearly, if you appoint me, Mr. President, I'm going to choke inflation out of the system through high interest rates, and it's going to hurt the economy in the short run, and it's going to hurt your reelection. And he said, Paul, I don't want my legacy to be high inflation. You do what you need to do economically. Let me take care of the politics. Well, in fact, it worked. Inflation dropped like a rock after the election, 2 years into Reagan's presidency. So he planted so many seeds, like airline deregulation, which brought air travel to the middle class, deregulation of trucks and railroads, telecommunications, which created the whole telecommunications revolution, the cable revolution. And he was a Southerner from the deepest part of the South. He grew up in a highly segregated society. He appoints more African Americans, more women, and more Hispanics to judgeships and senior positions in his administration than all 38 presidents put together. They were 8 women on the federal bench when he came into office. There were 40 when he left, including Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned the deregulation of telecommunications and trains and transportation and airlines. He also, while I think at the beginning of his presidency, maybe was a bit softer when it came to the Soviet Union, he really boosted NATO alliances and strengthened Europe even towards the end of his term.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because what happened was he saw through the experience of his office how the Soviets were supporting Cuban troops in Africa, how they were building their own military up, and then on Christmas Day 1979, invading Afghanistan. So here's what he did. He increased defense spending 5%. All the weapon systems that Ronald Reagan is touted for implementing, and he deserves all the credit for doing it, every single one, the MX missile, the cruise missile, the stealth bomber, intermediate nuclear weapons in Europe, Jimmy Carter started every single one of them.
Why do you think, if you mentioned so many of those accomplishments, why do you think he is remembered so much for failure?
I think, again, it's two reasons. One, that his post-presidency lasted literally 10 times longer than his presidency, and it was so successful, it eclipsed his presidency. And second, we have no tolerance for people who lose re-election in a second term. What people remember is the hostage crisis, and they remember inflation. They remember the gas lines. And that overwhelmed all the accomplishments that came both domestically and in foreign policy.
There was that story in the New York Times early last year that the incoming, or it was the campaigning Reagan administration, and it was prior to the election, had sort of undercut anything that Carter was trying to do in getting those hostages back.
This is a very important story.
How much do you know about that?
I know a lot about it. It's now been quite conclusively proven by one scholar after another that at the time we were negotiating to get these hostages out, that Bill Casey, who was the manager of Ronald Reagan's campaign, perhaps without Reagan's knowledge, I don't know, he went to either Mexico or to Madrid, and he met with Iranians and said, you will get a better deal from us if you don't release the hostages. And that led to the arms for hostage deal, the whole Nicaragua situation. So I believe that they convinced the Iranians not to release the hostages in the midst of the campaign and to wait till they came in. Now, again, can I prove it in a court of law? There are a lot of people who say so. I don't want to make that an absolute thing. I can only tell you that, including conservative writers, they have found this to be the case.
Stuart Eisenstadt, we really do appreciate you giving us time today. We know it has been a busy time, and a lot of people are seeking your attention today. So thank you for carving out a little bit of it to talk with us.
And thank you for the memory of KMOX.